So tonight, I wanted to do a talk based around a couple of cons. But first, I want to make a small announcement, which is that some of you know James Ford, one of the guiding teachers or the head teacher of Boundless Way Zen, was considering leaving the area, and there's an update on that, and he has taken he's been offered and has accepted a job at the Providence Unitarian Church, and is not going to be leaving California. And so this is a enormous relief and comfort for some of us who know and love him. But for me, this whole thing of his potential leaving and all of my kind of ideas around that, it's been an opportunity for me to look at what is it that I'm actually wanting from him or expecting from my teacher. What are you expecting from your Dharma teachers? And what? Where are you looking? Where am I looking? What am I? What's behind all that? And so I'm really grateful to have had the chance to look clearly at my own attachments, my own kind of graspiness with regard to having someone teaching me the Dharma or something, or having my teacher, however I understand that, nearby. So tonight's koans are a little bit related to this thing. This is from the Book of Equanimity, also known as the Book of Serenity. This is case 7. Attention. For a long time, Yaksan had not ascended the high seat. And the high seat is the place where the abbot of a monastery tradition sits. It's the place where Dharma talks are given from. The administrator's monk spoke to him, saying, "The monks have been wondering about some guidance for a long time. Your reverence, for the sake of the assembly, will you please give us a Dharma talk?" Yaksan had the gong struck, symbolizing the beginning of the Dharma talk, and the monks assembled. Yaksan ascended the high seat, remained silent for a while, then got down and went back to his quarters. Later on, the administrator monk said to him, "Master, a little while ago you agreed to give us a talk on behalf of the assembly. Why didn't you give us even a single word?" Yaksan replied, "There are sutra teachers for the sutras and instructors for the commentaries. Why do you come and bother this old monk?" The related case is case 1 of this collection. Attention! One day the world-honored one, which is one of the epithets for the Buddha, ascended the platform and took his seat. Manjushri, the archetypal bodhisattva of compassion, but here embodied as an actual being, Manjushri stuck the sounding post and said, "When you realize the Dharma King's Dharma, the Dharma King's Dharma is just as good." At that, the world-honored one descended the platform. And so this is this also points out the difference between having the bodhisattva of wisdom and a crotchety administrator monk commentating on the same Dharma talk. Another translation of the Dharma King's Dharma is just as is the Dharma King's Dharma is precisely thus. That's it for tonight's Dharma talk. In a way it is, but I'm going to take up my traditional practice of jabbering a little bit. Nyogen Senzaki, one of the great pioneers of Zen in the West, he came over in the 20s from Japan. And he and D.T. Suzuki kind of represented two sides of the of the spectrum. D.T. Suzuki was a very intellectually scholarly layperson who had studied an enormous amount of Zen, and he wrote many, many books on Zen, and he was seminal in kind of putting Zen into the Western consciousness. And Nyogen Senzaki, he represented the kind of practice side. He just sat Zazen. He taught people to sit Zazen. He also gave talks, but he never published books during his lifetime. And the end of, and I just actually finished working on a book of his collected teachings. And one of the things that he often said at the end of his Dharma talks, which are wonderful and beautiful and brilliant and all that, is, you know, it's a dirty business, this talking about the Dharma. It's really best if you just forget everything that I've said. So that's I wanted to read a couple of little supporting clauses here. Here's actually another quote from Nyogen Senzaki. The master in Buddhism is like a rainbow, beautiful to look at from afar, but vanishing when one sees it near at hand. The master in Buddhism is like a rainbow. And there's actually two ways I want to invite you to hear that. One is that the teacher in Buddhism, but this is also the master in the sense of the self. And Master Dogen had some advice on finding teachers and listening to teachers too. Dogen says, you should entreat trees and rocks to preach the Dharma, and you should ask rice fields and gardens for the truth, ask pillars for the Dharma, and learn from hedges and walls. Everything is our teacher. And it's also said in Zen that the only teacher of the only teacher in Zen is Zazen itself. Everything else is, you know, in a really important way, totally beside this point. You know, it's an interesting dynamic that gets set up in Zen, in that there are teachers, and the teacher is a specific role, and some people are teachers, and other people are not, in that same way, teachers. And yet, there is no teacher in Zen. There is no teacher other than this moment. The practice of Zazen, the practice of the Buddha Dharma, is just intimately inhabiting each moment of your life. Each moment that this body and mind encounters. And when you do that, you see that it isn't exactly your life, and it isn't not your life. And one of the fundamental kind of challenges we all are like looking for something. What is it that you're looking for? What do you think your practice is going to bring you? We recited Hakuin Song of Zazen. This very body, the body of Buddha, this place where we stand is the pure lotus land. This is Nirvana. This. And this may include all of your suffering and all of your ideas about that other thing, that other better nirvana that's clearly going to be. But this is it. This is all you get. What will you do with it? That's the gift of Zen practice, is showing up for that question. What will you actually do with this moment? And in the Mahayana Zen path, part of what we do is we aspire to save all beings. And how do we do that? And how do we do that when all beings are already saved? Sometimes Zen is described as contemplative inquiry, which is the practice of what really is here. Sitting down and really noticing what is here. And we have all of this stuff to support our practice here. We have Zen teachers and special teachers and authors and all that. But as Dogen says, the world is our altar. What are we looking for from our teachers? And we have such a strong belief that yes, I understand that this is all perfect just as it is. I totally get that. But obviously this is wrong, right? I mean, the contents of my mind is clearly inadequate, right? I mean, and we have that belief. We cling to that on some level. And we're continually trying to kind of sell that bill of goods to our teachers. And one of the great gifts of my teachers in the Boundless Prison is that they've never bought it. I've really tried to make sure, James, that you completely understand how totally just off the mark my mind is. Okay? I want you to know the exceptionally low quality of my Zazen. I just want to make sure that you understand. You said start that group and you said that it's okay. But I just want you to know how he doesn't buy it. And people come when I do interviews. People come and they try to tell me about their awful Zazen. And I don't buy it. That is an expression of the faith mind. The faith in the it's just faith in thusness. It's just faith in this being exactly as it is. And that doesn't actually require such a large leap of faith. Mary Lou and I were talking before about some of the meanings of the word Dharma. So the word Dharma means in English, as opposed to Sanskrit, which doesn't have capital letters, but in English there's a convention to use Dharma with a lowercase d to represent a Dharma, which means just a phenomenon, a mental Dharma, a rock, an iPod, a tree, a teacher. Those are all a Dharma with a lowercase d. And then there's the Dharma, which is the teachings of the Buddha. And also, the word Dharma means the law. It means the way things are. And it means also the universal truth. And all of these are, in English we kind of can differentiate these things, but that's actually really artificial. This is the universal truth. This is the teachings of the Buddha right here. This Dharma. This Dharma arising in my mind. This Dharma that is my life. This Dharma that is our shared encounter with this moment. What is it you think you could find? What would it be to find it? If in a moment you could have whatever experience you imagine is the peak experience of Zen, then what? What about tomorrow when you go to work? before the Dharma talk, we do the gatha on opening the sutra. the Dharma, incomparably profound and infinitely subtle, is rarely encountered even in hundreds of millions of ages. Now we see it, hear it, receive and maintain it. Incomparably profound and infinitely subtle, rarely encountered even in millions of ages. When John Tarrant was here, he gave a thought, and we did this chant before it, and he pointed out that, you know, we could just as easily say the Dharma manifestly obvious and not and never avoidable is always different. Are those two things or different things? Same thing. So I just want to encourage all of you to notice this precious Dharma. Notice the Dharma King, Dharma. That's precisely thus. It's just as is. Just as is. And part of what that is, our experience is just as is. There's one teacher in the Thai Theravadin tradition who, Ajahn Chah, wonderful, wonderful teacher. You guys should read him. He sounds just like a Zen teacher, but he never has studied Zen. Just, but he talks about leaving your thoughts alone, letting them be. And this makes much more sense than what we usually hear, which is let them go. We've got anger, well, just let it go. What does that even mean? And how can you do that? When it's here, it's here. But you don't have to mess with it. You can just notice it. Ah, that burning coal of anger. And let it be. The Buddha talks, and continuing the example of anger, the Buddha talks about anger as burning coals and angry actions as picking up those coals and trying to throw them at the person who's pissing you off. But, you know, that person can just duck and dodge, and you're going to burn the hell out of your hand each time you go and grab that coal. So let your confused mind be just as it is. Let your grasping and aversion dharmas be just as they are. Lost in stories, let that just be. And notice that this Dharma, this Dharma, this phenomenon arising in your mind is the Dharma King's Dharma. Manjushri is often described in the sutras or in the koans especially as the word strangely is leaking, overflowing, and he talks too much. It's a dirty business talking about the Dharma. It's really best that you all just forget everything I said. Thank you. Want to leave space for comments or questions or anything that may arise for any of you that you want to share. So feel free not to. Good for you. Dharma is one really, really big practical joke. Yeah. Keep at it. Well, you're right. And on the one hand, you know, we also take refuge in the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. We take refuge in the Sangha treasure. We take refuge in the Dharma treasure. And they're treasures. And they're really enormous gifts. And they're very, very real. The Sangha is my family. And the Dharma is, you know, the reason that I'm able to get out of bed. That's one side. And there's always that other side. And Zen practice is about being able to hold both of them. That the side of form and the side of emptiness. The side of relative and the side of absolute. One doesn't displace the other. And sometimes one side is clearer to us. When one side is clear, the other is dark. But I wholeheartedly agree with everything you said. And I also want to invite you to look closely at what is this thing that you're sure you don't have, that you haven't gotten yet. Is there some unexamined belief that's at the bedrock? And you know, that's part of the practice of contemplative inquiry. And for all of us to look at and see what are the things that we're just assuming is the way it is. What are the beliefs that we're taking as absolute truths rather than recognizing as dharmas? And practices are enormously valuable things, and we should all please continue to do Zazen and continue to live your Zen and continue to practice the precepts and continue to be vigilantly, choicefully aware of the arising of grasping and aversion. Thank you.
Expecting to hear.
Buddha ascended the high seat and said, "My friend, is he teaching or not teaching?" What's your thing?
Well, I think there's always the fear that no matter what you read or what someone, whatever dominantly put forth to you, is really the text that you can never come across to you. What if there were no teacher? What then?
Mm-hmm.
And that seems an awful scary place to be.
Yes. And in that place where there's no teachers, there's still the Dharma King's Dharma. There's still the walls and trees and hedges expanding the Dharma. There's still each moment of your experience. In that place where there's nothing, you can still sit down and encounter this. And, you know, there's a way to take great comfort in that, in the Dharma that's beyond anything that's in anybody else's mind, beyond anything that you have to learn or haven't learned or have to master or can't master or haven't mastered. On that desert island, all by yourself, there's still the Dharma. And I, for one, take enormous comfort. Side, I was extremely upset when I learned that James might be moving to California. Someone treats us bitterly. Or life treats us bitterly, yeah. Yeah, and that's the Buddha appearing to you, right? Oh, he has it. He hasn't given it to you? It's a good word. That would be a very sad form of Zen breath. That's living in a ghost cave. Thank you, everyone.